that high-tech equipment on the embassy's roof could be used to monitor communications within the German parliament and chancellor's office, which are a short distance away. The newspaper says the US National Security Agency documents suggest British intelligence is also carrying out spying elsewhere in collaboration with the US and other partners. Duncan Campbell is a journalist from The Independent.
Britain has an electronic espionage centre in the heart of Berlin, alongside the American one, and now, unless they've turned it off, it'll still be spying on Chancellor Merkel's calls. It has to be, because it's so close to the Chancellery and the Bundestag that any listening apparatus inside that white cylinder cannot but pick up the mobile calls, because that's what it's built for.
Germany's foreign ministry says if the allegations are true, it would violate international law. The reports come on the heels of
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Le monde va changer grâce. Nous ne sommes rien, soyons tous. C'est la lutte finale. Groupons-nous. Et demain, l'international sera le genre humain.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
Of the shooting in Norway and the explosion in Norway, which happened, what, on Friday?
Yeah, the explosion was, and then we left the air, and
right,
and then he went to, the camp.
Yeah, well, when we heard the explosion, everybody was willing to say, it's Muslim extremists! It's Muslim extremists! I don't think we made a comment on it because we didn't know, other than there was a bombing that happened. And as the thing started to unfold, and then there was a shooting at a political camp, which sounds a little like, you know, the Hitler Youth or whatever. I mean, who does a camp for kids that's all about politics? Disturbing. But anyway, so there's this political camp, and some crazy man goes and starts shooting kids. I get up Saturday morning, and I write to Scott Baker at The Blaze, and I said, I haven't seen this yet anywhere, and I can tell you exactly what's going on. Somebody just needs to follow the story. And what is going on is exactly what I said would happen. I warned that this would happen last fall. Can we find and see if we can find the audio of me saying it? It's actually a kind of a famous monologue because I made a it's a very complex theory, and you make one error in it, and it sounds like you are blaming it or agreeing with or whatever. And it's the monologue where I spoke about Geert Wilders. I think I only spoke about Geert Wilders on Fox one time. I think I had Geert Wilders on CNN headline news show, right?
Yeah, I feel like a couple times you had him on that show, yeah.
Geert Wilders, and I think I've had him on this program before. Geert Wilders is the politician out of
Denmark,
I think. He's a guy who is very outspoken on...
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land!
Indian land!
Indian land!
Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here. Indian
land. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We'll talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligence Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginals.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Anita Perry said, quote, "That's really difficult for me, Evan, because I see it as a woman's right. If they want to do that, that's their decision. They have to live with that decision." End quote. When pressed on her stance about this, she said she believed the decision to have an abortion, quote, could be the right of a woman. She went on, quote, "Just like it's a man's right if he wants to have some kind of procedure. But I don't agree with it, and that's not my view," end quote. Now, all of that, and this Taliban son of a bitch, Rick Perry, says his wife misspoke a word. He said to reporters, "From time to time, we'll stick the wrong word in the wrong place, and you pounce upon it." But I got my wife to look. She misspoke. That's all you need to know. Rick Perry, who tried to get the Republican presidential nomination a couple of years ago. Jesus H. Christ. I'm telling you, it's right around the corner. And let me just say, I've said this a million times, I have a very icy place in my heart for these Christian Dominionist sons of bitches. They're the reason I had to get a permit to carry a gun. Them. These people would make Hitler look almost benign. Yes, that's how bad they are. Because their plan for the Jews, the Christian Dominionists, is total annihilation. Their plan for the Muslims, total annihilation. Hindus, total annihilation. Buddhists, total annihilation. Liberals, progressives, Democrats, total annihilation. These people, these Christian Dominionists, are some of the sickest sons of bitches ever to come bursting out of a hell hole. And here they are. And Ted Cruz is one of them.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginals.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, the Angry Indian. editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from aboriginalnewswire.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous News, Thought and Analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world, living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, neofascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along. I wish peace to the gods and earths and love and solidarity to the entire original family in this time of strife and struggle. I'm your host, Angry Indian, and I'm here, you know, I'm looking at the script, right? And it's like, I hate to say, as always, it's that, you know, this is my partner, man, you know, Guadalupe Morales, right? You know, and, you know, we're in here. And we're doing what we can do to try to enlighten our brothers and sisters around the world, you know, especially the fourth world, you know, the indigenous world on which the first, second, and third worlds are built upon, that we come in here when we get a chance to, you know, get our point across and hopefully getting your point across, because we're only, you know, voicing here what we hear at our dinner tables. What we hear when we visit relatives, what we hear when, you know, we're sharing a beer, sharing a cigarette with somebody. This is the way indigenous people talk to each other. This is the way African people talk to each other. When white folks are not in the vicinity, this is how we speak to each other. Now, of course, those of us that are conscious tend to spend more time with people who are equally conscious, or at least folks who are somewhat inquisitive as to what the hell is going on, because it's really difficult being with someone who is not, and I don't want to say political because I don't think that's an accurate term, but who isn't as inquisitive. You know, I mean, it's frustrating, and my own relationship in that sense is a mixed marriage. You know, I mean, a lot of people look at us as being mixed, right? I mean, you're going through the same thing. You know, many of the editors in the Aboriginal News Group are going through the same thing. You know, I mean, every white person that wants to justify the Redskins to me, that wants to justify Indigenous genocide to me, that wants to justify the Trail of Tears to me, you know, like the Texas school books, you know, the Trail of Tears brought the Cherokee Nation to Christ in Oklahoma, right? Until they found oil, right? Oh, don't believe me. They found oil in those flatlands and decided that the hell with the Indians there. Not just the Cherokee, every Indian that they dumped there. You know, the Trail of Tears is what's really, you know, noticed in terms of the Cherokee Nation. But, you know, what we now know is the Choctaw, you know, all the five civilized tribes. You know, all the tribes that had black slaves. You dig? Because that's how my family ended up in Oklahoma. You understand? We were carrying the luggage of our Indian masters, you know, and we also have their blood because they took advantage of us. Yeah, I know a lot of natives don't want to talk about that. You know, that's the one point of contention where Indian country becomes mighty white when it comes to talking about indigenous slavery, or especially when it comes to the subject of the Cherokee Nation siding with the Confederacy. I mean, Stan Waddy was the last Confederate general to stand down. I mean, I suppose you got to give him credit for, you know, indigenous balls. You know, he was the last one to step down. But he basically, you know, supported the Confederacy because he and his followers decided that they wanted to own niggers. That they wanted to be part of the emerging Eurocentric power structure. You dig what I'm saying? You know, that's why they called the five civilized tribes, because they adopted slavery, they adopted Christianity, they adopted dressing like Europeans, they adopted all of the mores, mores, fears, idiosyncrasies, bigotries, biases, sense of bullshit, you know, all of it. You know, they were willing to accept all of it. You know, here it goes. You go from a nation that is led by the six beloved women. to a nation that's now all fucking scattered all over the goddamn place, and frankly doesn't mean any motherfucking thing, because they're the one nation in the United States that doesn't count blood quanta unless you're a nigger. Then all of a sudden, you're being Cherokee, or real Cherokee by blood, makes sense. Even though when Chad Smith was talking this nonsense, I'm not talking about the current president, tribal man. I'm talking about Chad Smith, who was pushing this nonsense and said that his hands were tied and there was nothing he could do because this is what the people wanted. Well, in that sense, he was telling the truth, because those that voted overwhelmingly to kick all the niggas out. You know, playing the same argument that Europocentric white folks make, that, you know, we might have enslaved you, but we never slept with you. We never had children with you. You know, I mean, all of these goddamn slave owners, all of these presidents that owned slaves, had all of these burr heads running about on the plantation and shit. You know, but no, they didn't exist, right? And we wonder why, you know, black folks in the United States anyway, look the way they do. Right? Or look the way we do. But see, you know, here it is. I get put into this nonsense. And one of the reasons why I'm talking about this, what? No, I look, we didn't have a particular subject when we came in here anyway, because, you know, I'm looking at the McBride case. And frankly, I'm afraid to talk about it. I'm afraid to talk about the McBride case, you know, for the simple fact that, you know, I don't want to cry here on the goddamn on the air. I don't want to cry on the air. I don't want to cry on the air. How is it that Renisha McBride has a fucking accident in her vehicle at 2:30 in the goddamn morning and knocks on a door in a predominantly white neighborhood to ask for help and gets her fucking head blown off? And, you know, white people are on social media and at my bus stop, you know, in the morning. You know, and they're saying that this is just an isolated incident and it's a shame, but that doesn't mean that we need to, you know, listen to Al Sharpton make a big deal out of this. You know, I mean, I don't want to cry while I'm in the fucking studio, because, you know, I don't want white people to fucking even get the idea that they can make me cry at this point over this kind of shit, because obviously the majority of the white folks, and, you know, I mean, hey, you know, I can say present company excluded, but I really have to ask you, how many of you are really fucking doing any goddamn thing? You know, if you're listening to this motherfucking show, if you bothered to listen to this show, that you have the fucking power to make the goddamn change that is necessary to prevent these fucking things from happening, not dealing with them after the motherfucking fact. We just had Jonathan fucking Ferrell. So now we have Renisha McBride. She has a car accident. She makes the mistake of knocking on the fucking door of a white person to ask for goddamn help, and she ends up fucking dead. And the average fucking white person out here can't say anything other than, but, you know, life goes on. And that is what the majority of you are saying. You know, and at this point, I really don't give a fuck about what y'all's opinion is anymore. I really don't. I really fucking don't. You know, I'm pretty much done with the white liberal. Now, I'm not talking about the white progressive. I'm not talking about the white activist, the committed activist. I'm not talking about like a Ralph Schoenman or a Maya Schoen or a Lynn Stewart. And I know nobody's really talking about Lynn Stewart, but Lynn Stewart is sitting in the fucking joint, dying a goddamn slow motherfucking death because she's a white woman who stood up for black people, who stood up for all fucking people who have been goddamn marginalized. And here the fuck we are under a goddamn black president, and nothing can be goddamn done. And Renisha McBride is fucking dead. She's dead because the black community cannot get off his motherfucking ass. Because we got black leadership that can't say a goddamn thing. They can't do any motherfucking thing. Because we got black Republicans. We have black conservatives that go on the fucking social media. They have the nerve to show their fucking faces on MSNBC, on Fox News, on all of these goddamn, and let's be clear, European-owned and operated media information systems that will tell you that Martin Luther King, that Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King, was a Republican that supported basically white power. Now, I know if you believe in Glenn Beck, you know, the same man who called the people who were murdered in Norway by Anders Behring Breivik, a neo-Nazi that traveled all throughout North America and Western Europe to align the neo-Nazi, white supremacist, fascist forces. He's talking about the return of the Knights Templar. He said in his testimony during his trial that he was a member of the Knights Templar. That means that they have reformed this nonsense. And they see Zionism, Christian Zionism anyway, as a way to retake Jerusalem, to retake Palestine. And then, if you listen to John Hagee, Pastor John Hagee, if you listen to, you know, all of these far right, you know, Daniel Pipes, all of these cats, they will then, once they get the white supremacist power thing moving in the Middle East, or what is called the Middle East, right? We're talking about Western Asia, right? In Africa, the World Church of the Creator has talked about this. And you don't think that Alex Jones and these other yahoos on the right, you know, David Icke and all of these fools, do you know how many Americans? I just saw a poll. It says 16% of people in the United States believe that there are reptilians that run the country. What the hell is going on here? And black folks are talking about moving further into a system that is trying to remove you. And 16% of these crazy people believe in reptilians? I mean, V was a goddamn miniseries on U.S. television. It's not fucking reality. There were real goddamn conspiracies. Not this nonsense. But you RGB motherfuckers, you want to stand there with your goddamn camouflage. And I'm looking at some of you because you want to shot at white people who are walking past you wearing the up-to-date goddamn camouflage. Think about it for a goddamn second. You're fucking confused. The real goddamn issue is every 28 motherfucking hours. But how many of you are talking about that? None of you are talking about that. No, you're screaming about how the Queen of England was really black, right? Or is really black, and that, you know, her twin sister is living in a dungeon someplace under Buckingham Palace, right? Isn't this the nonsense that you teach? That the real king of Germany is living in a dungeon, in chains. You know, all of these black people. You know, they keep the bloodline going, though, according to this mythology. But, you know, they have all these white people up on top, right? And you all listen to Alex Jones. And you talk about Albert Pike. And you have all these conspiracies. And you still buy and force your, you know... I mean, you push on people. You argue with folks and you bully people into reading the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, even though it's nonsense. And it's been proven to be nonsense. And even several of you, when I've given lectures, when I've actually shown the original French goddamn play that is based on, word for word almost, you still didn't want to fucking believe it. And how many of you still believe that John Hanson was the first president of the United States? Even after the Liberian government said that this is not what the hell you think it is, you're wrong. I mean, how many of you still want to argue about the $2 goddamn bill? I mean, come on. Come on. And then the rest of you with this whole Freemasonry nonsense. Come on. Renisha McBride is dead. Marissa Alexander is in the joint for defending her children and herself. Leonard Peltier still sits in the goddamn joint. Mamia Abu Jamal still sits in the goddamn joint with all of the malfeasance that went on during his trial. Jonathan Farrell, tasered and shot 10 times by police after he had a vehicle accident and he knocked on someone's door asking for help. Iana Jones was sleeping on her sofa in her own home. The police came in while they were filming a reality goddamn show. Shot first, asked questions later, and then used an incendiary device and burned her, and then tried to pin the death on her grandmother who was sleeping in the same room. But no, the black community has forgotten about that. We're more worried about what Beyonce is doing. We're more worried about Kerry Washington's dress on Scandal. Who made it? What's she doing? Right? You know, that's more goddamn important. And then we have Don Lemon here who says, would you rather be, racially profiled or be, I don't know. I mean, what the fuck are you trying to say, Don Lemon? You know, I mean, I've supported Don Lemon, but you know, that's the end of that. You know, I've supported him because he was brave. I thought anyway, you know, to come out. But see, the thing about it is, you know, I was defending him. You know, just like I'm not defending anybody any goddamn more. I mean, I'm at that point. I don't want to defend any fucking buddy anymore. Because why? What's the fucking point? Especially when it comes to black folks sometimes. What's the fucking point? You know, he's gay. He's with a white partner. And, you know, I defended him when people were talking about those particular issues. He's gay. He's got a white partner. I'm like, what's the fuck that got to do with any goddamn thing? You know, take him on his fucking merits. But it turns out he has no goddamn merit. He's a sucker. He's a sucker. We're, you know, lumbered with suckers who get this idea that if they kiss, well, let me not say kiss, let me just call it what it is, right? When they lick white ass, that somehow, or if they lick white ass, and many of them, they've been licking white ass for a long time. You know, look at Sammy Davis Jr.'s record. And look at what he actually has said in interviews about how much ass he had to kiss. Because I've mentioned the film A Man Called Adam with he and Peter Lawford, you know, who was a real goddamn friend of his who understood what the hell he had to deal with. And they actually showed that in the film on how he had to crawl and literally kiss white ass in order to have his motherfucking career. Up until he met, you know, the chairman. Right? Because Sinatra had the in with La Cosa Nostra. So when it came to Vegas, when it came to Atlantic City and what have you, he would just tell him, you know, if you don't want to have Sammy there simply because he's black, and even Don Rickles for that matter, because he's a Jew, well, then I'll have Vito and Giuseppe come down and talk to you. And that's the end of it. And usually it just took a phone call and that was it. So, you know, no. No, you know, yeah, I didn't have a topic and, you know, I don't give a fuck. You know, the bottom line is nobody gives a goddamn about black folks and, you know, black folks don't give a damn about black folks. You know, at least not once they get past a certain motherfucking pay grade. You know, this seems they just don't give a goddamn. Because if you notice, Oprah hasn't said a fucking thing. If you notice, Obama hasn't said a goddamn thing. You know, if you notice, even the Reverend Jesse Jackson hasn't said anything. If you notice... you know, MSNBC, Al Sharpton hasn't said anything. So, if you notice, nobody gives a goddamn. This is the Angry Indian, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Hi, this is Zesh9 from Zesh9.com. And you're listening to the Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Radio Anglo-Indian. Anglo-Indian Radio for the Fourth World.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power of making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell them to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
तपाईलाई थाहा छ नेपालमा पहिलो पटक कहिले एचआईभी संक्रमित व्यक्ति फेला परेको थियो
थाहा छ सन् 1988 मा
यतिका वर्ष बितिसक्दा एचआईभी एड्स को क्षेत्रमा के भए सकारात्मक परिवर्तनहरू कति आए कसले के गरे
के हामीले आफ्नो जिम्मेवारी बहन गर्यौं तपाईले गर्नुभयो
जवाफ आफैसँग खोजौं जिम्मेवारी बहन गरौं
सामाजिक रूपान्तरणका लागि गगन गृहको एउटा प्रयास
Hello, I am Susan Aglukkaq. The North has the highest incidence of sexually transmitted diseases, STDs, in the country. We also have a high rate of teenage pregnancies. High-risk behaviors, unprotected sex, lead to the spread of HIV/AIDS. It can be prevented. Learn the ways to protect yourself and others. Knowledge is power.
This is Kristen Hirsch from Throwing Muses, and you're listening to a podcast released under a Creative Commons license.
General Clapper, would you agree on saying that having access to public information is not an act of espionage?
Yes.
Would you, with your experience in intelligence matters, describe Cuba as a military threat for the United States?
Absolutely not. Cuba does not represent a threat.
Did you find any evidence indicating that Geraldo Hernandez was trying to obtain secret information?
No, not that I recognized.
Did you, General Clapper, come across any secret national defense information that was transmitted to Cuba by Geraldo Hernandez or the other defendants?
Not that I remember, no.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm Danny Glover, activist and actor. We just did a scene from the trial of the Cuban Five, who are doing long sentences for fighting terrorism. I hope that you would join us in this effort to support them and free them. It is a very just cause.
I'm not General Clapper. My name's Peter Coyote. I'm an actor and a politically engaged citizen. I hope you'll take a few minutes to learn something about the case of the Cuban Five. It's a grievous injustice and a stain on our national honor.
Hello, this is Maurice Muhammad, Minister of Information with Black Unity, and you can always find us at www.blackunity.name.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio,
the
smartest original.
This is APNS Public Radio.
The opinions expressed in dispatches represent the analysis of the participating editors and may not necessarily reflect the group positions of the ANG or its public news wires.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back. Okay, we're going to speak to Dr. Chris Newhouse. Now, we spoke to her better half, Posse Call, on Twitter, where we discussed the far right in Kansas, in the greater United States. We talked about what we consider to be the problem of extremist, Christian, neo-fascist, neo-Confederate thinking, beliefs, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they're the ones that are doing the damage to the system. You know, be it from your run-of-the-mill Republican down to your Confederate flag waving moron that's standing in front of the, you know, whatever the hell they stand in front of. You know, they're just making fools out of themselves. Dr. Chris Newhouse has been working diligently. You know, this is not a hobby for her. She's been working to make sure that women in the state of Kansas, the free state of Kansas, I should say, especially for those of us who remember the history of slavery in this country, for those of us who are cognizant of the history of John Brown and his family and their contribution to the struggle for liberation, true liberation of African people and Native people, I should say. He was also very cognizant about that. He was a Christian, but he was not a maniac, even though he's being portrayed as a maniac. I mean, some of you who are old enough will remember They Died With Their Boots On. Propaganda. Early state propaganda against John Brown and against the horrors of slavery. But we're talking about something else in Kansas. We're talking about 2013, where a woman in the state of Kansas, in the free state of Kansas, in a democratic, supposedly democratic country, under the first black president of the United States, where that right is being basically taken away from them. It's being ripped away from them. As somebody who's old enough to remember abortions with wire hangers. I mean, the idea that we're going back to this, that we're even debating this, is disgusting to me. So, you know, when we were speaking to her partner, he talked about basically the more political end of this in terms of the threat that he perceived as someone who did security for abortion clinics in the state of Kansas. And right now we're going to talk about the women's perspective, because there's really not our place to do that. So, Dr. Chris Newhouse, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud and happy to be here. I hope I can provide something, some insight for your listeners, because I know we're out here in the Midwest, and it's, you know, known as the Bible Belt for a reason. And I think as time goes on, the coasts are, I mean, we're really literally diverging so much in the way that we look at things, and so it's a complex social landscape. But you summed it up very well. You know, Kansas was founded by anti-slavery abolitionists, and that's why, you know, the town that John Brown is associated with, which is Lawrence, Kansas, where I was born, is the main street there is called Massachusetts, because that's where they came from, and they settled here intentionally to keep Kansas from coming into the nation as a pro-slavery state. So we have this long and proud history, although of course the history of treatment of the indigenous people is not at all you know, something that we should in any way be proud of, but in fact it's horrific. But anyway, you know, what you said about the neo-fascist state, and what Chris Hedges has said recently, is that basically, you know, you have this mindset where the entire viewpoint is set by the Republican platform led by the Tea Party, with this sort of proto-fascist mentality of it being a Christian nation, all this kind of fabricated, like, neo-Nazi type of ideology that's purely, it's like fabricated. It's not based on any history or any reality, even as far as it speaks to just being, you know, this nation of colonialists. So, I mean, it's not even living up to its own ideals. It's literally very similar to what the Nazis did. So, and this is in full swing out here, where everyone literally watches Fox Faux News. That's the only TV channel that's on in 90% of the houses, And up until recently, people listened to Rush Limbaugh routinely if you walked in anywhere in any business in a radio station on, that's likely what you would hear. So they're basically being brainwashed 24/7 by Tea Party politics. And so now we have this governor who's a born-again Christian evangelical who happens to be Catholic, but, you know, there really isn't differentiable from Jerry Falwell or any of the others. As far as I can see, they all pretty much look the same. And the idea is to keep women barefoot and pregnant and you know, illiterate, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, how would you define the change in terms of some gains from the mid-70s, maybe through the mid-1990s? Women are still being underpaid. There's still the question of, sexual exploitation, you know, granted, but the objectification of females in initial sense. I mean, how does this relate to what is happening, especially in terms of choice in the United States?
That's such an interesting question. And I can remember watching the Clarence Thomas debate. Remember when, when he was being elevated to the Supreme Court, there was that whole court case where he had the sexual harassment charge by, right, Anita, I can't think of her last
Anita
name, but
Hill.
Anyway, and, okay, and remember that whole thing? I remember watching a really interesting piece on one of the talk shows when Camille Paglia, I think is how she says her name, was debating another kind of well-known feminist whose name I don't recall, but it was just very interesting to me because, to me, I think, you know, of course, I grew up during the time of the late 60s, early 70s when all this was going on, the civil rights movement, the anti-Vietnam War, the women's rights. And, you know, I think, honestly, I think that I can't quite put my finger on it, but it seems to me that women shouldn't be asking to have their cake and eat it too. They want to be considered, we want to be considered equal, but then when the play gets a little rough, then we start whining and want to be treated separately. And to me, that just doesn't roll. You know, you have to decide whether you want to be a fully equal partner, which means in some ways you actually do have to take into the fact that these creatures that we call men think and act differently than we do. Our brains are slightly different. It doesn't mean that one is superior to the other. It's just that we are different. We're not exactly the same.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's a very French philosophical way of looking at it, because Simone de Beauvoir was making that point. And you were speaking of Camille Paglia, who has made some very controversial statements about various forms of exploitation. So you're going to have a hard time getting people to cotton to any idea if you mention her. Camille Paglia, Andrea Dworkin, Gloria Steinem, who has a history of working with intelligence in the U.S. You know, when we look at feminism today, I mean, there's a discussion that is being touted right now as a milestone between Melissa Harris Perry from MSNBC, I believe she works for, and Dr. Bell Hooks. And frankly, I was listening to it before I connected with you this afternoon, and they really weren't saying anything other than talking about themselves and their own class status and their wonderment about how they were able to get into the mainstream. Ramona Africa wasn't asked to be part of this discussion. Angela Davis wasn't asked to be part of this discussion. Asada Shakur wasn't asked to be part of this discussion. A black woman working on substandard wages at a McDonald's was not asked to be part of this discussion. And even though they were specifically speaking about African women in North American society and U.S. society in particular, you know, looking at women in general. And, you know, it's easy to put things on Obama, and I do not support him politically, but he has not addressed misogyny. Bush did not address misogyny. Clinton did not address misogyny. Bush and Reagan did not address misogyny. So, you know, how is it that here it is, we're in the 21st century, and we have discussions amongst feminists But we're not having discussions amongst feminists in terms of questioning the actual paradigm. They just discuss the male paradigm, and it's a Eurocentric male paradigm at that. But they don't really discuss the paradigm, which would include not just poor white women, but women of color, women who are immigrants, women who are transgendered, you know, all of that, to bring it all into some sort of clear focus that we can actually look at and then start to make decisions as societies and as individuals. Or as a society and as individuals, I should say.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the big problem is whether you view the world as yourself as an insider or in some kind of elite position or as part of the mass, you know, the general, the rest of the world, the ones that aren't on top. And so that's the problem. I think that no matter what, when you get drawn into the system and you have a certain status and a certain class, then you either absorb that outlook or you become like an internal exile. And that's actually... Sorry, I think I'm losing you. But, So, you know, I think a lot of people actually probably see themselves to an extent that way. I know I do because, I mean, I was raised as a white middle-class person. My stepfather was an immigrant who worked for U.S. intelligence. Because of his training and background and his linguistic capability. So I saw a really different view of the world through that, and I knew all about the Nazi, the Holocaust. I lived in Europe shortly after that period of time. There's still the vestiges of it there. But so, I mean, I think you learn about hypocrisy very early as a child when you see these gross injustices and illogical situations in society. But so I think what happens is that subconsciously people just make peace with it because they can't resolve it. So like you become a part of the system and you're moving up in it. And if you're a person of color or a woman or whatever, you learn how to play the game. You play with the big boys, like, you know, we were talking about before, which is somewhat necessary. But that, you know, at what point, I mean, where have you sold your soul at some point? When do you, you know, start realizing you need to get it back, or do you even? So, I mean, I think a lot of, I mean, to me, that's why I think Occupy and some of the other things that have gone on, like the Arab Spring and some of these other sort of unexpected transformative things that have happened, Chelsea Manning, Snowden, all these things that have gone on lately are really a manifestation of that, is that we realize even if we are in a position of relative privilege, which people in the U.S. in general are, when we live off the pain and suffering of many, many people throughout the world, including here, the indigenous, the fourth world here. So I think most of us are at least somewhat aware of that. And I think that's why these things are so compelling and people are actually like supportive. A lot of people that you wouldn't expect, even people within the intelligence community, are supportive of this, because just the gross weight of the hypocrisy of it is just so overwhelming that you have to reclaim your soul in a way at some point. And you know, to what extent you can do that and how well you can articulate it will vary on the person's individual courage and willingness to expose themselves to the reality of everything. But do I expect my neighbors out here, the ones that are toting AK-47s and, you know, waving their Confederate flags? You know, probably not. You know, it's a much longer battle.
Well, that leads into a next question. As an activist, how has your outlook on life and your personal work to ensure the rights of everybody, and especially of the women in your community, how has it affected your personal life?
Well, I think, you know, I think it, my analogy is it's kind of like when you're trying to swim the channel or whatever, you know, like the English Channel or something, you know, at some point you really do feel overwhelmed. And, you know, even if you're relatively less oppressed. To me, I've always juxtaposed my situation with, you know, like worst case scenarios, you know, so it keeps you from feeling pity about yourself you know, whatever it is that you're dealing with. You know, like when I was in college, the Palestinian issue was actually really, you know, to the forefront. I dated a Lebanese guy, so I was really familiar with that. I knew Palestinian students that were at the university where I was. So, I became kind of aware of politics in that sense, and then later moved to a more kind of global understanding of things. And I don't know if Mike told you, but we actually worked with AIM for a while in Lawrence. We were working on helping getting Brother Leonard out of prison, which of course has been a huge long thing and still ongoing. So, you know, I am very grateful that I was educated by activists who were in far worse situations than I could even imagine. I think I would be totally crushed and like non-functional if I had to deal with some of the things that the people that we met and worked with had dealt with. So I have that model to look up to. But I think in general, it does wear on you, and you get burned out and you get cynical and you get frustrated, and you don't necessarily want to keep fighting all the time. But to me, I draw my inspiration from seeing, you know, the bravery of others, like Malala and some of these other just amazing women, and the women that you mentioned. Angela Davis is a huge inspiration, and I mean, just listening to the things that they have gone through and can articulate it, it just makes me feel like, you know, nothing that would happen to me would be anywhere comparable. I have no room to complain.
Well, you are in the middle of a fundraising campaign, though, aren't you?
That was started, back in, it's finished now, but I mean, we're still working on it. But the main thing that we want to do out of that is to eventually form a foundation that will be helpful in some way as a kind of a political activist thing in this area, because there isn't much here. So we have a fund that's been in place for a long time here called the Second Chance Fund that helps women that need assistance with actually getting a surgical procedure. So some of the money will be contributed to that, and we want to keep it going and maybe do something out of it. I'm trying to get past the point of just surviving day to day and get back into active with actually helping, because since I haven't had my license, I actually haven't been able to practice medicine. I'm just working as a researcher, so there's not so much I can do.
Well, we have about 5 minutes left. Why don't you go into what happened with that? Because when we were speaking with Mike Cadell, your partner, who, again, just for clarity's sake for the listeners, her partner is Mike Cadell. He is the producer of Radio Free Kansas, where you can hear this show on Fridays or Saturdays, depending on when Lupe is able to come in here and edit everything down. You need to go check it out. It's over at Blog Talk Radio. He has a new show every day. Don't miss it. And, could you bring up that particular subject? You know, what was your experience in trying to provide healthcare to women in your area?
Well, okay, I graduated from med school and did my internship in 1986. So when I did my first position that I worked at was in an inner city clinic with another physician who actually provided abortions, which was fairly unusual for that time. There were only a couple of other places in Kansas City, and this wasn't like an abortion clinic. It was just a family medicine clinic, and we did peds and regular, you know, all the regular family medicine, just like your family medicine docs would do. So it was just a part of that. We considered that part of the spectrum of healthcare. So it wasn't anything unusual, but this was in 1986, 87, and it was kind of at the beginning of the really intense push towards domestic terrorism on the part of the anti-choice people. And, you know, they'd gone from just busing in folks to hang out with signs to actually, you know, a series of bombings and arson throughout the country. There were like around 200 clinics that were burned over a period of years, including Dr. Tiller's and one of the ones you know, a few miles away in Independence, Missouri. And actually, when I was working there, there was a fire, but the police caught it when it was out in the back in the dumpster still. They didn't actually get into the building. But some activists were able to burn down another building right next to us. They burned down the wrong building because that building looked more like a medical building, and the clinic we were in looked just like a house. So they burned down the wrong building. But so, you know, this kind of activity was going on from the very beginning, but it hadn't moved to the point where they were actually trying to assassinate people yet. It was more just property destruction. And then I actually had a scholarship that I had to work off, so I had to move out into a rural area. So I left for about 2.5 or 3 years from actually providing abortions. But when I came back, during that interim time, it had gotten a lot worse. There were killings, and there were a lot more injuries and daytime bombing, so it wasn't just at night. And so when I came back, it was in like 1992, I think, you know, I knew that I was walking into a battle zone, essentially. So I wore a bulletproof vest, I learned how to shoot, carried a firearm, I was armed a lot of the times in the clinic in case there was an intrusion, you know, with someone that was armed, and I needed to be able to defend the clinic. So several of us were actually armed on site, which is pretty bizarre. And then after Dr. Tiller was shot the first time, we had federal marshals working at that clinic where I was also coming just to help with these second opinions for the late term abortions. And so that was a really interesting experience to have marshals actually in the building, and, you know, they escorted us in, and, you know, just, it was a very kind of militarized environment. And I think when you're in that sort of environment, and, you know, talking to other activists and people who've been in those kinds of situations in a war zone, you get really kind of numb to it. You don't really notice it or think of it as being anything unusual. It's just the way it is. So I, you know, when I talk with people about it, they're kind of horrified, and they think, oh my God, you know, heck, you know, whatever. But to me, it was just normal. This was just the price of being, you know, a provider, and I totally believed in it. I still do. It was just a mission, and we saw it as a military mission, essentially. So I never had any regrets about it, and didn't have any hesitancy about it. But what really actually destroyed me was the state oppression. And that's really what happens, I think, to activists. They can survive, you know, on their own terms, but then when you start dealing with the oppression of the state, has a lot more resources, it has a lot more clout, and it actually can wipe you out really quickly. So that's what happened to me, basically. They targeted me and were able to totally defeat me. And so now I'm, you know, without the ability to continue other than just to talk about it or fundraise or whatever.
Well, what can people do to help not just you, but the movement in general to ensure that women have access to the health care and the choices and the respect that they're due in the United States?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, I'm sure you know about Aaron Schwartz, the young man who committed suicide last year after mm-hmm. being harassed just incessantly by the prosecutor for downloading a bunch of material to make research more available to researchers. So anyway, he had an interesting essay that he wrote about his theory of change. And I thought that was really thoughtful. I mean, he said what most people do is they work on a theory of action. So they think, what can I do? You know, what do I know how to do? What's my skill set? How can I apply it to the problem? So they work at it from their own internal strength and what they think they can do, what they can add personally. But he said, actually, what we need to do is like reverse that and look at it from the other way around. What is really going to make a difference? You need to get in there at the top and analyze it backwards. Like, who is it that controls this? So we know that it's actually our state legislatures that are putting these restrictions into place. So that's where you need to start. You need to figure out how to basically change the equation so that these nutcases, these fascist nutcase evangelicals, are not determining everyone's lives, because that's what creates this hostile scenario where it's really the only option for people is to get, do it yourself, literally, abortion. We're back to where we were pre-Roe, where, you know, in many cases, it's just not feasible for someone to get a legal medical procedure anymore. So this is what we're faced with, and the reality of it really has not sunk in yet. But I think it's starting to, as women are finding their appointments canceled in Texas now because of new law. So, I mean, it's going to take the outrage of the public and the getting rid of these lunatics off the state political machinery.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Chris Newhouse. Thank you for being on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. We really appreciate it. And, you know, hopefully we can help support you in your struggle some way, you know, as time goes on, because it's important that women hear from women like you who are out here doing the work. It's extremely important. And thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid from The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, and you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
We are the Ku Klux Klan! We hate niggers! We hate Jews! We hate faggots! And we hate specs! We don't have to have a reason to hate it! People need to get off your ass and wake up! This is America!
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African-American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year or whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African-American.
Yeah, I was driving in today and I was seeing, because I saw this piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck, it's What's for Demagogue.
This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Head on RadioNetwork.com, an internet-based conversation radio experiment. available most easily at headonradionetwork.com. There's a listen live button. Just jump right on it, and there you are. Or if you're on a mobile device, it's also easy to find us at TuneIn Radio, a nice app for your mobile smartphone, or Tuner Internet Radio, or Dar.fm, or Stitcher Radio, Streama.com. We are rather ubiquitous. I mean, if we got more every night, we'd be paying salaries, right? HeadOnRadioNetwork.com.
And every one of you, I know that many of you work very hard to help my son become the next U.S. Senator from the state of Texas. So I want to say thank you for your hard work, for your commitment. God bless you all. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so this goes back. This goes back to the campaign trail in which Rafael Cruz, and I still have to get the Rafael quote from being there. You tell Rafael I have a message for Rafael. He was out on the hustings. Hustling the fundies, big old phony that he is, for his son, whom he has declared is the anointed coming king messiah of America. No, he really has. It's not a joke. Just to get a little taste of him. I mean, I didn't say that.
You know, very interesting. If you look at the Declaration of Independence, you find a series of grievances against the King of England. Did you know that every one of those grievances were preached from the pulpits of America before they were penned on the Declaration? It was preachers like George Whitefield and others that were the forefathers of this country.
Not Thomas Jefferson. Agnostic, deist. Not Ben Franklin, didn't give a damn. Not universalist John Adams. Not deist George Washington. No. George Whitefield was the father of America. This is scary stuff. That's why we're running it on Halloween. And this is more of that same shtick that Rafael Cruz has been hustling out there about the Black Robe Brigade, or whatever the hell he calls them, who would preach on Sunday and go kill English soldiers on Monday through Saturday. We'll fast forward again.
And he said, I was not elected to be quiet. I'm not going to be quiet. I refuse to answer on the grounds that my privilege. Unfortunately, let us say that he is in the lion's den, as I was sharing a little while ago. The lions are roaring from both sides. The lions are not biting because of all the prayers. So please keep the prayers up. Yes. Well, I'll tell you something. I'll pass my phone around. When Ted was in Abilene, what was it, a month?
Did he say he'd pass his porn around? What?
A month or so ago, Ted was in Abilene, and they found three people that were wearing these T-shirts. I don't know if you can see them from here, but just give me a minute.
Well, no, we can't see it, Rafael. This thing goes on for near an hour. I will not subject you to it.
Probability, your parents were conservative Democrats. The conservative Democrats of 30 years ago are Republicans today. That is a message we need to communicate, not just to Hispanics, but to African Americans, to people that are what Rush Limbaugh calls low information voters. And
wow, he's just called African Americans and Latino people
low information voters. That's going to, you know, that's going to be great. You know who this guy reminds me of more than anybody else? Rahm Emanuel's daddy. Because Rahm Emanuel's daddy, you may remember at the beginning of the Barack Obama's first administration, was taking some grief with his son being chief of staff and everything, was taking some grief about how Obama wasn't sufficiently obsequious to the state of Israel. And Rahm Emanuel's daddy said to these people, look it. My son is the president's chief of staff. It's not like he's some Arab scrubbing the floors. It really happened. Well, you've got a little taste here via the audio of the way Rafael Cruz works his tax-free hustle in order to see his son advanced. And of course, we've had the audio where he anoints him and lays his hands on him and declares him to be the Messiah come to save America. A king, describes him as a king. But it was in this particular speech where Rafael Cruz declared, no kidding, that Obama seeks to destroy all concept of God, and then in this video, posted on YouTube, Rafael Cruz, speaking to the Hood County Tea Party, urges the voters, and this is before, I guess, the election of 2012, urges the voters to send Barack Obama back to Kenya. In the name of Jesus, of course. In the same speech, he said, the wicked were ruling Texas and America, and the wicked are Republicans in name only who rule the United States. He also said Obamacare would cause people to commit suicide. He worked in the death panels. This guy's a real dandy. He said that Barack Obama is just waiting for an opportunity to take sides with Muslims against Christians. No kidding. You get the idea.